Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. We're talking the movie Game Night. We're talking the movie Annihilation this week. We're talking the TV miniseries Waco. I'm Neil Rosen with Bill Bregoli.
My stomach is rumbling. Don't mind that, folks.
Bill McCuddy.
Is that like
here.
An alien thing? Yeah, it's a fireside chat today. It's 72 degrees yesterday in Manhattan.
78 degrees.
45 degrees today. And so we got a fire burning. It's and
weather.
I don't have a fireplace, so that's going
to
be expensive.
And Jack Rico from the highly relevant podcast.
Just call me Rico Suave.
Yeah, there you go.
No.
All right. So... Actually, I'm gonna let's start talking about Annihilation. So you saw Annihilation, Jack.
I did.
And you saw Annihilation.
I didn't.
Bill?
I haven't seen what Bill Bregoli did.
Who would like to?
Yeah, let Jack go.
Okay, Jack, tell us about Annihilation.
I'm hearing it's dreary. Let me just start the conversation that way. I heard it's super downer.
Annihilation is based on a book called the Southern Reach Trilogy. And that book came out just a few years ago, and it basically is about four women. In this particular case, Annihilation was the first book of that trilogy, and it's about four women that go and explore Area X, and it's not necessarily described exactly what it is, but about 12 expeditions have gone in and have not been able to return.
This is in the near future, I'm guessing.
Yes, this is in the near future, even though...
Because I don't remember it from the 70s.
Yeah, so near that the cars actually look exactly the same. That's what you call the near future.
Oh, okay.
Really? And there are no cars in the film. And I asked director Alex Garland. He said it was a budgetary issue. So I started laughing at that. But Natalie Portman stars in the film along with Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, Oscar Isaac... Jennifer Jason Leigh is in the film.
What a cast.
And great cast. And there's a lot of controversy about the film because they're saying now that there was whitewashing, that one of the characters in the book, Natalie Portman's character, was Asian, and so they chose her. But when they asked Natalie Portman about the issue, she had no clue. And this was a reporter from Yahoo News. So now there's a backlash on the film, even though from this perspective as a Latino critic, you have three Latinos in the film and there's four women that are the star ensemble. So how is that in any way exclusionary? How is it in any way whitewashing?
Well, it's because it's Natalie Portman. It's because it's the main character and it bumped somebody that might have been Asian, let's say.
But you could say she's Jewish, so...
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways you can go with it. I think the problem with today is that people want to look for a problem, and I think this is a great case where there is really nothing to truly criticize about it, because when they asked director Alex Garland about the Asian character, he says that the book never truly describes her character as Asian in any way. So the movie's kind of going through a bit of a...
So you can't criticize it for that, but you can criticize it for what?
Or did you love it? No, I didn't love it in any way. I mean, if you saw Ex Machina, director Alex Garland is the same guy. So there's some parallels in the
film.
Hence
the Oscar Isaac connections.
And
since they were both.
Yeah, and remember, the Ex Machina was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. So this guy knows how to make movies. The movie is visually impactful. I thought that the story was very interesting, the way it starts. Great opening. But yeah, it's a slow-paced film. And so when I asked director Alex Garland about, this seems like a very trippy, surreal movie. Like if you're high on drugs, man, and you're watching this movie, you'll see things that you probably don't
know. Well, so what'd you see?
Well, I didn't take any drugs before I saw the movie. Yeah, but I can tell you that the movie...
It's not engaging.
It's hard to figure out because even though it's about the exploration of this area that no one knows and no one comes out alive and she's trying to find out what killed her husband.
Well, wait a minute. Oscar Isaac came out alive. That's her husband,
and
right?
And he soon dies within
the
film.
Okay, fine. Okay, sorry.
But because of something that happened. So when we look at, there's a lot more questions that you ask when you leave the film than when you're in just watching it.
Is the plot hard to follow?
It is, because there's time lapses. There's about four time lapses, four time
frames. Yeah, they flash forward,
frames.
They flash backward.
Right, so it's hard to kind of figure out.
There's this affair that Natalie Portman's character has that has nothing to do with anything.
And then towards
I don't want to see that taken out, please.
And then there's this moment towards the end where the volume becomes so loud that your eardrums start hurting and you almost want to walk out.
Oh, they start with this voomp, voomp, voomp.
And then it becomes
that sounds like somebody's
really
idea of
loud.
High concept
so,
and yeah. like
this is an artistic film meant for people who love science fiction and that are very open-minded about a different type of movie. A different type
like
of
like Prometheus head scratching or like
I thought Prometheus was a bit more commercial and mainstream. This is a lot more art house sci-fi.
How did you like it compared to Ex Machina?
I liked Ex Machina a lot better.
I loved Ex Machina.
Because Ex Machina was not that it was the most original concept. You could kind of, it was glam.
It's about the dangers of artificial intelligence.
Right, I mean,
that's
what it is. It's actually a Twilight Zone from the 50s or early 60s.
We'll take your word for it, Grandpa.
But still, I really liked Ex Machina. And first time I really saw Alicia Vikander.
Vikander.
Alicia Vikander. Yeah, and I did that junket. I interviewed all of them, the director, Oscar. It was quite good. So this is no Ex Machina.
Nope.
No.
Well, it sounds like it has a lot more on its plate. It's one of those things that, again, I haven't seen it, but it sounds like this guy comes off that film, has a big idea, gets a big cast, and they go into a big woods and everybody dies.
One at a time.
Well, yeah.
So it's
we don't
Predator.
Want to spoil the ending.
It's Predator? Can you see these? Can you see these
the
like,
monsters? And, yeah, absolutely.
They're
and
all
I think
different too.
They're all different, but you know, ultimately, you're yes. still scratching your head. Is this an alien movie? Is this a thriller where you know
you
don't
the
quite
crappy
find
romance.
Out what this is?
Yeah,
the only way I can describe it, it's a sci-fi thriller, but without the payoff.
So is it trying to be like one part Blade Runner? Original Blade Runner, one part, you know,
I would not compare
alien.
This movie with any of those. I think this movie stands alone in its sophomore debut, but from Alex, and I think he was trying to create something, but probably didn't have the budget to do it. It's
you know, it's
a
92% on Rotten Tomatoes, but even some of the people that are praising it are saying it's, I'm quoting now, empty but engaging, or empty but good looking.
That's a contradiction.
Yeah,
How is it empty and engaging?
You always go to this... Rotten Tomatoes thing. And
well, Manola.
What's your problem?
New York Times is on there.
Well, no. Well, here's the thing. I wish there was a grade on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, we've had this conversation.
That would just. If you go to Rotten Tomatoes, there's something called Top Critics, the people that I actually think have credibility.
Neil Rosen, Bill McCuddy, Bill Bergoli,
Jack Rico. Yeah. So, you know, when you factor in all the people, like the 300 people that are on Rotten Tomatoes, a lot of whom are not accredited critics that are just like in grandma's basement, you know, writing a review or something like that.
I love
and
this association
they
that everybody's
can
in a basement.
Pump up,
right?
The studio can pump up those grades on Rotten Tomatoes. So, you know, if you tell me that you read a couple of reviews and you said, oh, the Times thought this and it, but I don't really trust that.
All right, I'll tell you on this that the New York Times liked it.
Okay.
And I was surprised by that.
I'll take that.
Pete Hammond liked it. But these praises are sort of backhanded praises. That's what I'm saying.
I think that there's a difference in criticism between the intellectual criticism and then the common moviegoer, you know, mainstream criticism. I think people sometimes just look at it from just the common moviegoer, and I think that A.O. Scott, Manola Dargis have this intellectual, academic sort of analysis on film.
Like Neil Rosen?
Yeah.
No, not like that.
But
he was talking intelligent
not everybody,
people.
Not every single person that goes to the movies looks at a film critically and academically. I think they just look at it and react to what the film gives them.
So here's an example.
So I wouldn't discount them.
So last night I saw a screening, which is not an intellectual movie at all. It's Game Night, and it's with... Jason Bateman.
I would call that a lowbrow film.
I mean, well, it stars Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams, and the movie begins. They meet at a trivia night, you know, in one of these trivia night bar things, and they both are like right there, like they
chemistry.
They get the answers to these questions like before the guy even finishes. Writing, like one of the questions is like, what Supreme Court justice? And Jason Bateman goes, Oliver Wendell Holmes. And he goes, that's right. Can you please let me finish reading the questions before I... He goes, yeah, I got it. And he interrupts him there, you know. But it's a very... It's a smart comedy. It's not American Pie. I mean, it's...
But
it's,
it turns dark, right? I haven't seen this either. And we're going to hear from Jason Bateman in a moment,
right? Well, here's what it's about. So Rachel McAdams and Jason Bateman meet. And then you flash forward, like they get married like 3-4 years later. And they're hosting these game nights with these two other couples in their apartment.
Are they married in the film?
Yeah. Okay. And they get married and they host this game night where they're playing It's pretty much, you know, regular board games, you know, Trivial Pursuit, Scrabble, Life. Remember Life with the old wheel that you'd spin? You know, Pictionary, charades, that kind of stuff. And
boy, that sounds like it would get boring after a while.
That's only the first few minutes of the movie. But then Jason Bateman has issues with his brother, played by Kyle Chandler, who was Coach Taylor in Friday Night Lights. And he shows up in this
Which I've
hot...
I've never seen, by the way.
You a fan of Friday Night Lights, Neil? Well, you've never been very specific about that.
Only one of my favorite shows ever. But Jesse Plemons, who's also in Friday Night Lights, plays
He's great
cop,
in Black Mirror.
He's a next door... Yes, he
is.
That's
awesome.
He's great. Jack turned me on to Black Mirror, and that Star Trek wannabe episode with Jesse Plemons is great.
Brilliant.
But it is brilliant. We've talked about that on the podcast. But that said, so Jesse Plemons is this creepy next-door neighbor who's a cop and wants to keep getting invited to their game night. And so the brother says he comes in, and he's like a real flashy guy. He works in investment banking. And he says, I'm doing game night tonight. And does one of these murder mystery things where he hires actors to do the thing.
Right.
And something goes wrong. And that's all I'll say. But there's a lot of... Really, I mean, it's not stupid humor. It's very clever and it's very funny. And whoever wrote and directed this, even the end credit sequence, which is
two directors actually.
What?
Yeah, two directors.
Yes, which is not. But the guy who wrote it, who's I believe was is Hispanic, Perez, I believe, with his last name. Very clever writing. Just lots of one-liners that are fun. Like for example, whoever wins game night tonight wins the keys to this car. Just the keys? No, the whole car.
Yeah.
This is like
I've seen some of those jokes in the trailer, and I've seen some pretty dire things in the trailer too. That
it's
I guess
funny.
I won't give
clever.
Away.
It's funny. It is not a stupid comedy.
How would you? Who?
I liked it.
Who would
I
you
really
compare the film to? What other film would you compare it to?
Smart comedy.
Like a funny, very bad things. Or like a...
Rough Night? Like Rough
Night?
Do you remember
Bad Words, that movie that you liked with Jason Bateman?
It was terrible. I hated that movie.
I love
Bill
that
loves
movie.
That movie.
I love that movie.
It's a clever comedy. I mean, it's, you know... Okay. In terms
like
of,
Rough Night. Jack asks a good question.
Okay, here's what I would compare it
that
to.
You'll get it to.
In terms of
eventually.
The level of the writing of the comedy and the wit in the comedy, I would compare it to 21 Jump Street.
Oh,
in terms of that kind of
So writing. Very broad. But the premise is kind of Rough Night? Kind of like...
What's Rough Night?
You know,
the Scarlett Johansson film with the
Johansson.
Women who... There was also a comparison African-American film called Girls Trip where Tiffany Haddish came out.
Yes.
So they all get together and
it's
then something goes wrong.
People get together for a good time and something goes wrong.
I remember Rough Night and I did see Girls Trip. No, it's more clever than that. But something does happen and they're on a chase. So there's action-y stuff in there. But it's all about the writing.
Well,
and
I love Jason Bateman. And I'm a huge Rachel McAdams fan, but I hear she's kind of a bitch in person.
What? Where did you hear this?
No, anything? Anybody want to jump in there?
But again, can I really tell what the real Rachel McAdams is like from the
Did it lead to coffee or a drink or anything?
What did you hear, Bill? I want to hear that.
She's just kind of snotty.
But who told you that? Or what context was it in? Don't tell me who, but what context was it in?
A girl that hates her, another actress. No, I know. I have no idea. I can't remember.
the real funny, the two things that I, in terms of performance, is Kyle Chandler, who never plays comedy in broad comedy, was actually pulling off doing a comedic role, which I've never seen him do. But Jesse Plemons, who played a psycho in Breaking Bad, in the last season of Breaking Bad, is playing a psycho here, but he's, like, funny. And he's just... I also did not know that this guy had deadpan comedic timing. And it's just... He's creepy and funny. And I saw this not in a screening room. I saw this in a huge...
Well, the man
theater.
Who does have deadpan...
Everybody was laughing their asses off.
The guy who can lay a bon mot, like, right on a platter and serve it is Jason Bateman.
Yeah,
and,
that's right. He was asked...
Our own Bill Bergulli has culled a little nugget from him.
Yes, he was asked if the cast indeed got to ad-lib it all.
Most comedies, you want to try to create kind of that vibe of it's all kind of coming apart at the seams, and oftentimes that means you've got to kind of be loose with the dialogue, and it's not that you're trying to make it better or fix something that's wrong, you're just trying to keep it kind of frayed. But it was nice to just work on a set with that kind of atmosphere.
He also said that he used to do game nights when he was younger, but then his family came along, and now he doesn't get to do it personally anymore.
And we've mentioned this in the podcast a few weeks ago, but if you do like Jason Bateman, Ozark on, which one is it, Netflix? Is Ozark Netflix or is it
Amazon. Yeah, I think it's Netflix. Netflix, yeah.
Well, anyway, one of the numerous streaming services, Ozark, quite good. I'm watching Waco. I started watching Waco. Again, another Friday Night Lights alumni, Taylor Kitsch, who's great on that show, whose career I thought was over when he made that bomb. It was like, I think, the biggest money-losing movie in the history.
Oh, yeah, the Disney thing? Disney. Carter? What was that called? Carter?
John Carter.
Where'd I get Ben Carter?
And Disney lost so much money on that, and he became like box office poison. But then he started doing a couple of roles with Peter Berg, who created and wrote the TV series Friday Night Lights.
I heard he was going to be in True Detective 3, and I don't know what happened.
I think that's happening. I think that just got lit up again yesterday.
Well, he plays David Koresh, the guy from the Branch Davidian compound in, the early 93?
Oh, yeah, he's unrecognizable.
My wife and I, you know, we watched like every episode of Friday Night Lights. She goes, I don't even see Tim Riggins, who's the character on Friday Night Lights, played by Taylor Kitsch. I don't even see Taylor Kitsch in this.
He's unrecognizable.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look anything, but he's real good. And your favorite, Michael Shannon. Michael Shannon is in this.
Thank God, because he just doesn't work enough.
Right? He's the FBI guy who's trying to
he's in every talk, movie. Shape of Water. He might win the Oscar.
Trying to talk David Koresh out of the house. And what's his name? The guy from...
Is this a TV show or a movie?
It used to be the Spike Network, and now they've changed the name.
Paramount
Network.
So it's a TV show.
Who's the guy? He was on Broadway. John Leguizamo. John Leguizamo is also... He's alcohol, tobacco, and...
ATF
agent.
Guy.
And who kind of infiltrates the compound.
Alcohol,
and,
tobacco,
there's a lot of people in this. Andrea Riseborough is one of the devoted followers from Battle of the Sexes. Is the one who had the affair with Emma Roberts.
She was in a movie called We, directed by Madonna, led by Oscar Isaac.
That's Emma Stone.
Emma Stone, yes, from Battle of the Sexes. Yeah, so she's
this podcast has really devolved into just like an old people's home roundtable.
Anyway, I like Waco. It's good. It's long, though. It's 17 episode series. I mean, but they are.
How far into it are you?
I'm in episode 5, but they're stuck in the compound.
See, Paramount sent me all 17, and I just haven't gotten to it.
Do you have them?
Do you need it?
Yes, Bill. I don't think you're telling me the truth.
Did they give you CDs or just links?
They actually had the actors come to my house and act it out. It was really
That's
nice.
Incredible. 17
they were here for
that?
We had to put them up overnight.
That's funny.
That Taylor Kitsch can eat.
So, you know, Red Sparrow opens up next week.
If anyone from Paramount is listening, please send Mr. Rosen the links to the rest of the episodes.
And we're gonna review it next week. But, you know, Jack has seen it.
I saw it at in a New York theater where it was the RPX theater in Times Square, which is by far the best movie theater I've been to so far.
Wait, Mrs. McCuddy, who's in the next room, will attest to the fact that we saw when we went to the same screening you did.
Not the iPic theater.
All right, calm down. We've explained
the Regal Cinemas.
It was a dim bulb. That was a dim bulb screening you attended, sir.
What?
Yeah, because we came home and looked at
the invitation.
We went home and yes, we enjoy this film in dim bulb production.
What is dim bulb?
I saw the trailer. We came home and looked at the trailer, and it was much brighter.
Huh? That's interesting.
So anyway.
Well, anyway. So we're going to review it next week. But I was talking to Jack the other day before we started doing this. And without really reviewing the film, Jack, I don't think was that thrilled with Red Sparrow.
I did like it. You told me that there was many people in the theater that did not like it, especially
including
women.
Me, Badsky.
Yeah. So I mean, look, I don't want to talk too much about the film because you guys might want to talk about it next week. But what I did want to talk to Neil
and Bergoglio, we should pitch also, is going to talk with her tomorrow.
Oh, perfect.
And we're going to hear from Jennifer Lawrence.
Natalie Portman.
But I think
I told you it's an old people's
Jack
home.
And I wanted to talk about a little bit was what the hell happened to Jennifer Lawrence's career?
She did Mother.
You know,
yeah, no, she's been making some interesting choices as of late. I mean, I like Joy, but I don't think Joy.
I love Joy.
I love Joy.
I like Joy, but I don't think that Joy was the type of film that makes careers. And she is considered an A-list blockbuster actress that I don't think has been delivering A-list blockbuster films. I don't know if she's on that Angelina Jolie level. By the way, well, Angelina Jolie might not necessarily be on that level.
She hooked up with David O. Russell. Is that what you're going to say? I mean,
no, like Darren Aronofsky you're talking about.
No, no. I mean, just in general, in terms of her career.
I mean, the breakout thing were the
Hunger Games franchise.
Okay. And then she gets the Oscar for, was it Silver Linings Playbook? Or what did
Yeah.
Right. Okay, for Silver Linings Playbook.
And ever since then.
And ever since then. It's been now. Look, I'm with you, McCuddy. I love Joy. I love Joy so much that actually, when I'm flipping around on the dial on my television and I come across whatever she's on, this is Home Shopping Network or QVC, and I see Joy. I think it's Mangano, you know, and she whatever the hell she's selling, I'll just stop on a dime and watch it because I'm so intrigued. Because
right.
I saw
so
the
wait,
movie.
Let's make a distinction, okay? We can say she's made some missteps, but you can't say they weren't good movies. Joy was
Mother
at least
a
good choice. Mother was an interesting choice. She was she was Stupan Aronofsky, and he talked her into it. The way he talked a lot of famous people into making The Fountain, which I thought was awful. But what I'm saying is she made smart decisions that turned into bad movies. What I'm saying about Red Sparrow is, and Jack, you can chime in.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a smart decision.
It's a director she worked with before too.
That's right, but she's doing a Russian accent. She's Atomic Blonde was a million times better. I'm sorry, we are starting to review it. I don't want to.
It's
but
fine.
I'm just saying I think it's a bad decision. You can look at earlier movies that didn't do well, but at least they were still smart decisions. And you guys can tell me
I thought Red Sparrow was really good. You know, I thought it was one of these European international thrillers that took its time to really develop the characters well. You cared when something happened to these characters. There's been so many spy movies that have gone awry so quickly that you don't believe anything that happens in these films. But I think Red Sparrow really took its time. I understand it's based on a book. It's very explicitly sexual. I mean, there's so many scenes.
Well, kind of goofily.
Charlotte
Rampling's embarrassing.
Is you know, spread eagle on a table, you know, enticing men.
And that's not embarrassing.
Well,
it is
it's done tastefully.
It is for Jennifer Lawrence.
It's done tastefully, and it's Jennifer Lawrence. So, you know, she's young, she's beautiful, and it was like, wow, she kind of really decided to go into nude and not have a problem with it, and I thought that took a lot of guts, and I was totally into the whole film from beginning to end. So I thought this was a good step in the right direction after Mother to kind of recorrect her career. Now, whether that movie makes a lot of money or not, or is it, you know, nominated for anything, I don't necessarily think so, but I think it's a step in the right direction for the type of movies that I know she can deliver.
I will say this, while you were saying this, I pulled up her list of credits, and I agree with you, Bill McCuddy, that the movies might not have, other than Mother, which was a debacle and a horrible film, some of these movies.
But a smart choice for her.
Some of these movies did not
do well. A daring
choice. That are quite good. In addition to Joy, for example, I really liked American Hustle, and I think that, you know, maybe it didn't perform that well.
Passengers was.
I love Passengers. I love Passengers.
No,
come on.
No, there's no way you loved it.
I loved it.
I have a better ending for it. But we both talked.
Bill does have a better ending for Passengers.
But Passengers is an interesting choice that she thought was going to be commercial.
You have a.
You know what's terrible is. What's terrible is Selena, is it called? Or what's the one?
Serena. Selena.
Selena or Serena, you were looking at the list, that she made with Bradley Cooper. They made it up in the hills.
Oh, that was horrible.
They shot it up in the hills.
That
thing
movie
is
went
bad.
To DVD. Okay, so here's a quick look. After Silver Linings, she did a movie called House at the End of the Street that got no play.
Yeah,
the Devil You Know.
Isn't that what you're talking about?
That I never heard. No. She then did the final Hunger Games, which kind of cemented her there. American Hustle, she was not the star of that film. Then Serena with Bradley Cooper that bombed tremendously.
Yeah, that was a piece of shit.
Then she did the X-Men movies that I never really thought that those movies necessarily highlight her specifically or her acting. So it's just
I forgot how rich she is.
She's one of
Passengers was for all intents and purposes critically a failure and box office was a flop. Then she did Mother. So, yes, we can create an argument that the last 7-8 films that she's done have not worked out well. The Last X-Men was considered a flop, and now Red Sparrow, which I think is the best since Silver Linings Playbook that she's done, where she's led it and she's the star. I thought this was a good film, but not necessarily a great film, but a good film that you cannot really
enjoy.
Bill doesn't, McCuddy does not have a good way to end Passengers. You had a way of reconstructing the entire movie.
Of
instead of following the story of what's the actor from
Chris Pratt. This was a video essay done by Nerdwriter where he reconstructed Bill, and said, what if Chris Pratt is the villain in the film?
Bill directed me to somebody on YouTube, somebody who did something on YouTube. Where
Nerdwriter, that's what I was just commenting.
Yeah, he was telling about
instead that. Of the movie beginning with the Chris Pratt story linear, you begin right.
Can
when
I just say all of this? He's just said like all regurgitating just everything I just said.
Welcome
like,
to
you
the old people.
Well, okay.
No, it's really cool. And
but,
let's,
it, but that would have been a bit more of a hip intellectual way to do the movie.
Right. So if you saw the movie,
love it the way
go to YouTube.
I think it was great. I really loved it. I loved Passengers. What can I tell you? You know? What can I tell you?
Bill, did you love Passengers?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
I was okay with it.
I liked it. I thought instead of the Nerdwriter thing, even if they had just... if she had awakened somebody at the end, that would have been interesting.
Oh, yes, yes.
The thing is, Andy Garcia comes out of nowhere in the last minute. Well, what was that all about?
That's because he's in a lot more of the movie. There's a lot more of the movie they didn't show.
And then the guy from The Matrix, what's his name?
Lawrence Fishburne.
I thought he was poorly underused. And the ending made no sense to me. And so that's what I'm saying. Yes, I thought the production value was excellent. Jennifer and Chris Pratt were charming as heck. But the payoff of the film, you're there for the whole time expecting something great happening around the holiday season, and it underdelivers.
They sure promoted it too, remember? And I think maybe she thought this was going to be a big blockbuster for
Everyone thought that didn't have
X-Men or Hunger Games on it.
And it was an original story.
When you start to talk about her career, and I listened to you just listing all these movies, and Neil just looked at the list too, I automatically, as a critic, and some people listening to this will be annoyed with me, I throw out the X Games and X-Men.
X-Men and
the Hunger Games. I throw out the X Games. I throw all of those movies out because... Uh-huh. I don't consider them choices movies. That you make as an actor. No. I consider them
like the Avengers, the people
something
Avengers
that you're going to make to so that you can make the one for them and the two for you or whatever.
The Ang Lee theory. Right.
Right. So I guess I don't even think of those. And I don't think this is we disagree. I don't think this is a step forward for her.
Last week we talked about Black Panther and. Surprisingly, Mike
what did
Sargent
you guys
was,
think, by the way?
Because well, that thing went, God, and we thought it was going to be big, and then that just went nowhere.
So, Mike Sargent, at the time that we taped the podcast, other than Mike Sargent, nobody had seen the film. So, what I'd like to know, Jack Rico, since this movie is making a gazillion times $10, you know what I mean? What was your take on Black Panther, and what do you think it means, the fact that it's making this much money for not only. The movie franchise Black Panther itself, but it is an African American.
But it's cast. Not. It's not. Okay, I was going to say.
Gonna change. Yeah. Is it going to help?
Is there an end to this question?
Yeah. Will there be now a Hispanic superhero?
No. I mean,
what if we told you we already answered this 5 minutes ago and you didn't hear it?
Right.
So just some context.
To know what
you thought of the film also.
Some context. The Black Panther was created in 1966 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. So there was already Black Panther was already in the Marvel pantheon of superheroes, right? They're just using somebody within the portfolio of the Marvel characters. We're not going to see a Hispanic one because there are no Hispanic characters in Marvel.
You could create one.
You could create one now, but this guy has like a 50-year advantage.
60s.
He was 1966. So
6 months before the radical group, the Black Panthers. Performed
before, right?
Came out. Yeah,
exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So
nobody's even making that connection, which is kind of interesting too. Is like it's called Black Panther, and nobody's like thinking because that
nobody's
group is
old enough anymore.
Yeah, right. They're all the now defunct group.
So
Black
I think
well, the poster has a quote from Eldridge Cleaver.
I didn't know.
That.
Totally. So I think one of the things about Black Panther that I particularly took out of it is that there was so much hype around this film that I was starting to wonder: was there a lot of hyperbole? you know, sort of wrought onto the film. And I compare it a lot to Wonder Woman. I think Black Panther, just like Wonder Woman, are important films for the time that they came out.
Right. Wonder Woman, woman superhero, woman director. Black Panther, African-American cast, African-American
Same
director.
Thing with Coco and Pixar. It was Hispanic, you know, character that came in at the right time to uplift.
But not Hispanic directors on Coco, were they?
Yes, Adrian Molina is a Hispanic director, along with Lee Unkrich.
Funky Cold Molina.
What?
Funky Cold Medina. So what we're seeing is we are seeing diversity be the leads in these films and make a lot of money. And
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. And I go back all the way to Hamilton, where there's been this defiance. And, you know, what a lot of people are saying is that I think that the rest of the world is sort of tired on the white hero. There's this white hero fatigue where they kind of want to see other stories, fresh stories. And I think that there's been a lot of people that are going to see this movie, not necessarily because it's a great movie, but because of word of mouth, and because they understand that this is an important film to see in the theater at the time that it's in. But ultimately, is it a great movie? Will it win an Oscar? Will it be nominated for something? I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think it's the apotheosis.
Anything technical next
year? Obviously technical.
Brigoli.
But I'm kind of along the lines that Jack is saying. It serves its purpose.
Serves its purpose, but I don't think
I don't talk for as long as you guys. It serves its purpose. That's all I have
to say.
And that quote served its purpose.
Not that anything is worthy of the hype that this thing is getting, but do you think, I mean, I saw a tweet from Karen James, our colleague who does this podcast and does the TV show occasionally, who said it lives up to the hype. I don't know if anything could live up to the hype. Do you think that it's as great as, you know, I mean, Disney's doing a real hard sell on it, but I mean, what do you guys think?
Hey, it's fun. Its audience will really like it. People will think it lives up to its hype. There are people who will think so, and other people will
think, I think Jack's right. I think it's like, it's time. It came at the right time. There's probably a little white guilt going, yeah, let's go see the Black Panther. Let's go see something different than we normally always see. And it's crossed over maybe for that reason. It's also a very cool movie, they tell me. I haven't seen it. But I will say that there is this crackpot kind of guy who writes for The Observer, I think, Armand White, who lives in New York. And he is an African-American who wrote a very interesting piece about...
It was a contradictorian,
right? Of course, everybody loves this. They're in a small corner of Africa that's Shangri-La, that doesn't really exist, that is its own thing and doesn't... He compared it to Green Pastures from the 30s about...
Interesting.
And said that this was like a whitewashed idea of what a perfect black movie is, like a little corner of a place that nobody can even... that doesn't even really exist. And
it's a fictional country fictional story of a fictional character. So he can do whatever he wants with that. And if he wants to create, if Jack Kirby and Stanley wanted to create a utopia, why not? You know, I think what a lot of people are saying about this film, and it's a bit of a backlash, is that white people for so long have always looked at themselves as heroes, but African Americans have never had a black superhero in their lives, so they don't know what that feels like. And I think a lot of the critics that are writing about it are writing from a point of view of optimism that finally we can equal the playing field when it comes to the perception of what a hero's supposed to be. And that's, I think, what a lot of this writing...
But let's make it just this one and not a lot more, right?
So what does this mean for the future of the movie business and for the future of this franchise?
We were going to see much more women-led films. We're going to see much more African-American films. We're going to see much more inclusion in these films. And I think because it's going to be fresh, it's going to be new, there are going to be a lot of original stories, I think it's going to be great for movies. And we're going to see a lot of these $150 million box office because it's original and fresh and new and novel. That's what I think is going to happen for the next...
Well, the next big black superhero or black tentpole movie that fails is going to be a huge setback. And the same is true for the next big female-driven movie. That's all I'm going to say.
But isn't that always the case?
I mean, they're going to keep making Black Panthers, and they're going to keep making Wonder Womans, and those are going to keep making money.
Isn't this always the case when, for example, you know, Avatar reinvents... James Cameron reinvents the way to shoot a movie and look at a movie in 3D. And then everybody tries to capitalize on that afterwards. And they do these shitty transfers of movies that were shot in 2D, unlike Avatar, which was completely conceived and shot in 3D.
Yeah, but that lesson's been learned. They're not doing that anymore.
Everybody's thrilled with Avatar.
But that was a gimmick. That was a gimmick that they were trying to roll off on.
Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton Alice, the Johnny Depp thing. And they just did a quickie conversion on that. And then there were all these really bad conversions of 3D, and people were invariably disappointed. So I'm saying you do something great, and then people try to imitate it, and it's never quite as good, and it becomes disappointing. And I'm wondering if that's what's, to your point, Bill McCuddy.
Well, we'll see. I hope not.
We'll see. So before we go...
Wait, can I just say I'm watching Counterpart more? And I is anybody else watching this with...
Counterpart?
J.K. Simmons and Alan Starrs.
Yes, you talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I just want to know if anybody's gotten into the fifth or sixth episode. That's on Starrs, as I just said.
Starrs, I don't get Starrs.
I don't either. I look at it, and I'm just not sure.
And I'm wondering, you know, is this going to be, I mean, this, the big four streaming services, which are...
Neil's very reflective today, right? Yeah. Contemplating life.
Starrs isn't it, right? I mean, how many of these things are you going to have to subscribe for to be able to watch everything? I mean, he's going to be like...
I think Howard Stern said that the other day. I'm getting $10 to death.
Facebook is now creating a full lineup that they just renewed for like 5-6 shows. So I think you're going to be seeing this from everywhere. I mean, Lexus had a production company that they put out episodes of an original show. I think Lexus the car company.
Jesus.
Everyone's getting in the content game. That's why they're calling it Peak TV.
So the problem is going to be is, you know, most people subscribe to one or two of these things. I mean, you're going to subscribe to, like, God knows how many they're going to be down the line, you know?
Well, Disney's coming out with a brand new streaming service. You can expect a lot of original shows coming out of there.
So is that – so this is going to cost you $1,000 now, like, a year to, like, subscribe to everything, you know?
No, because you won't subscribe to everything. Yeah. I think that's where it's going.
Like a bundle, like with your cable package, where it's like, oh, I have the premium package. I get these files.
Well, that's a really good – that's the best question you've asked in this whole podcast. I mean, seriously, like, what would it take, though? These Mavericks, Hulu, Star – they're not talking to each other. Netflix, Amazon. What would get them all at the same table and bundle them together?
Yeah, sign up for a cable company. You get the silver package, platinum package.
But we're thinking like TV dinosaurs. What do you need to bundle? What do you mean just to make it cheaper if I signed up for all three or four?
Where it's like,
because they don't need each other otherwise. What you understand is the others needed the cable box. They needed the thing. They needed to all agree to be on some cable platform.
Well, you need Wi-Fi in order to get
On a second. Hold on. Yeah. Let me add, out of the four of us here, how many of you are cord cutters? Bill?
No, we still have the box. No.
Bill Pegroli?
I have a box.
The goddamn triple play. Box. Jack, okay. It's the triple play.
I have DirecTV Now, the app. I cut the cord 8 months ago.
Jack is always on the cutting edge of all this stuff.
He wears a woolen cap better than anyone.
And I spend $35 on my DirecTV Now, and I get 60 channels, and they're all the ones that I actually need.
HGTV.
Can you select which ones you want?
No, you can't.
Go, like, I want Game
There's
Show
packages.
Network.
There's about four packages. So you can get
Do you have to have that little satellite?
No. You download the app on Apple TV, and then you just put in your username and password. They charge you $35 a month, and you get to watch 60
channels. Wait a minute.
Channels.
Do you get ABC, CBS, NBC,
all of them.
And Fox?
All of those. All the big major ones. ESPN, VH1,
Why isn't everybody doing that? Why didn't you tell us about this months ago?
I don't know.
8 months you've been doing this?
Yeah.
What's your cable bill? Neil Rosen.
I pay $35.
Welcome to What's Your Cable Bill?
$240.
$240.
That's insane.
No, but it's cable, phone, and internet.
All right, calm down. What's yours, Pegroli?
$306.
$306.
Yeah. What's yours?
I think ours is...
Sue, how much is our cable bill?
Like 300.
Oh my God.
We're right in the middle. Sweet spot. But that's per house. We have two...
Talk to most millennials. 95% of millennials do not have cable. They all are watching this stuff on apps. And, you know, I don't know if cable's going to go away, you know, I mean, or it's going to become like
cable
a landline.
With my 17-year-old daughter, the McCuddies gather around like it's the Dumont in the 50s and we watch TV together. Otherwise, she goes to her bedroom and watches whatever she wants on
TV. Right, so here's the thing. It's a native thing. So if you grow up on your iPad and you're 2 years old and you're watching the iPad and your dad's watching the TV set... and you can't watch anything on there because, you know, he's watching it. this is the way you grow up. So by the time you hit 15 and 20.
But also the TV isn't cool. If dad's doing it.
If dad's doing it, it's not cool. So by the time you reach to be 15, 20, it doesn't even occur to you to watch a television. It just occurs to you watch it on the phone, on an iPad, on a second screen.
It's a generational thing.
It's a generational thing. So it makes sense. Me, I'm on the cusp between both.
So we're in the middle of, I wanted to mention this, that we're in the middle of, fortunately for me, coming towards the end of the Olympics. And, you know, I have to say that, is it just me or is this becoming like really, I mean, watching these Winter Olympics, it seems really redundant to me. I mean, like I'm seeing nine.
Also, everybody's really shitty this year.
Well, no, but it's like variations on a theme. It's like I'm watching the skiing thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like first it's like it's the or let's take the skating. Okay.
Okay.
There's the women's single short program. The women's single long program, the men's single long and short program, the couples short program, the couples long program. Then you get to the slope.
Then the women's single big air. Have you seen that on skating? It's really bloody.
Then you got this half pipe thing. So you've got the skiers going on the half pipe. Then you've got the snowboarders going on the half
pipe. Was Margot Robbie performing in any way?
No. And then you've got the slope where.
What's the one where they ski down a railing? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, that's like some kind of like.
Who invented that? It snowed in the middle of a Holiday Inn, and they started skiing off the roof, and then they came down.
They have
onto
the snowboard version of it and the ski version of it.
Yeah.
You go down the slope, then you got to go up on a railing, then you go down, and then you go up a couple of hills.
Are we talking sports now?
Yeah,
these are Olympic events, and other than curling, which really bores me because it's like watching shuffleboard on ice.
Whoa! Except for that Russian chick that looks like Angelina Jolie.
Wow.
I don't understand why the guy was doping to like for curling. I mean, it's ridiculous, but okay. But I'm finding
Lisa Rossman doesn't like that they have to sweep in front of it.
It's the meaning. Yeah.
I find the whole thing to be like, I think a week would it's just enough. I don't know.
I don't even watch TV.
Lisa
Seriously.
Rossman would pay somebody else.
I haven't watched one single event of
the Olympics. Watched
the Olympics?
I've been
no
at
interest.
People's houses. We had a dinner party this weekend and we had it on in the background. And if something, my wife wants to see Lindsey Vonn.
Everybody wants to see
the paired skating. Yeah. So if it's happening, we'll sort of have it on, but we haven't been searching at it.
I've been
searching
watching way
for
too
it.
Much of it because one of the networks I work for has radio rights.
And are you bored by it?
No, I'm not bored by it.
Could there be anything more exciting than the Olympics on radio?
Yeah, let me tell you. The only thing we've been covering, the only sport we're covering is hockey. And now that the Americans are out of it, we just got a memo saying, well, that's it for our play-by-play.
Wow. The Olympics
because that's
and
the
radio.
Only,
I'll tell you
what they have is they do these. We do these long form shows where they do highlights from these various things and tell you the results and that sort of thing. They don't do play by play of women's half pipe or that sort of thing.
The ratings have taken a massive tumble from the last 4 years.
Why?
24% are down. I think a lot of it has
Katie
to do with
Couric.
What we were just talking about. A lot of people have cut the cord. Millennials have no interest in the Winter Olympics. And they're not watching television.
Whoa, wait. The one thing they do like, which the Olympics has gone backwards and has helped their ratings, but it's injured a lot of people, are the snowboard sports, the X Games kind of sports.
That's probably true.
That's the thing you talk about the railing.
That's probably true.
That's like an X Game kind of thing.
But what you're saying, what I think the real problem is there is nothing on earth that you need to see all of
live
when we're the one thing we're conditioned to from the 60s at 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock news is sports highlights. So you tell me I got to sit through 4 hours of downhill skiing or I can just see who won and their run. And by the way, it's a 2 minute run anyway. I'm just going to watch it.
So
the
next day. NBC losing money on this or is it all pre-sold?
It's pre-sold. My wife used to work over at NBC and I understand that they hit $1 billion in sales.
Wow.
So that's great. They kind of made their money back. But what everybody's now starting to talk about is that with the 24% is a lot in terms of TV ratings. And advertisers don't necessarily like that. So what they're trying to find out is how do they make it more digital than television and start making money through there. But they have the rights until the year 2032.
NBC
so you,
does?
NBC
wow.
does.
On every winter and summer game?
Yes. So the question is, in 20 years, how many people are going to be really watching TV?
It's not going to be on primetime television in 20 years.
No.
For one thing, if they can digitally stream it, they can take those advertisers and customize them. They'll know exactly who's watching which screen, and they can sell one person a Lexus and the other person a Ford.
Right now, it's on several channels. There's an Olympic channel.
But it's all the same commercials. So my point is, if they can stream it, they can pinpoint who's watching, and that's going to be the future. They'll probably make more money on advertising that way.
So next week we will review Red Sparrow, even though we kind of talked about it today. And
Musket, Moose, and Squirrel.
As I said again, Bill Brigoli will tomorrow is actually interviewing Jennifer Lawrence.
I'm in a press conference with 100 geeks.
So,
so
that'll
be
very
there.
Interesting. I look forward to that. And in addition to that, what else is coming up next week? Anything
Are we ever going to talk about the Oscars, Neil?
Oh, the Oscars. Well,
I have no interest anymore because there's no front runner and no leader. And
But that's what makes it fun. It's wide open, baby.
It's just too hard to decipher who's going to win.
So next week is our official
Oscars
predictions program.
Sunday, March 4th.
Yeah, which is a week from this Sunday.
Have you watched all the movies?
No.
All nine
Carry
movies?
There's only 28 days in September, buddy. And today is the 22nd.
So Red Sparrow and Oscar prediction.
There you go.
And Jennifer Lawrence.
Red and gold.
Next week. And listen, I can't say it enough. I think you should go see Game Night because it is really, really funny.
And if you haven't gone to CUNYTV.com or CUNY.TV or whatever it is.
CUNY.TV, and you could watch our show. It used to be called Talking Pictures. Now it's Talking Movies. You could see our Oscar predictions there with Bill McCuddy, Neil Rosen, and Lisa Rossman. And for Bill Brigoli and Neil Rosen at Neil Rosen Apples, follow me on Twitter, and Jack Rico at
Jack Rico Official on Twitter.
And Jack Rico's podcast is the Highly Relevant podcast, sort of abandoning that Showbiz Cafe moniker for some reason. But okay, that's your deal.
It'll all come out in the trial. Follow me at Bill McCuddy, and I'm also on Instagram now, thanks to the youngsters.
Oh, Instagram. Bill Brigoli is not on social media, but I hear he's
Facebook. That's enough.
I hear you toying around with doing Snapchat. I think this is going to be your big thing.
I think it's more likely he's in chat rooms.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go. Anyway, right, thanks a lot. But Bill, before we go, what do we do on this show every week?
We waste a fuckload of time.
We sure do.
We also watch the bad stuff so you don't have to.
Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And as always, we'll sit around talking movies with you with our Oscar predictions next week.